Hi everyone, Drew Prode here, host of the Broken Brain Podcast. I'm back with another Big Idea of the Week episode. And today we're talking about something that's radically transformed my life for the better. That's why I want to share with you. I've used it with myself, on myself many times, and I've used it on friends and family to help them dial in and personalize their diet to feel great. And that is the elimination diet. The elimination diet. You've probably heard it on past podcast episodes. Maybe some of you have done it, but there's probably a lot of people that have heard it that have never done it before and don't really know why you would use it. Well, I'm here to tell you that if you want to personalize your diet, if you want to figure out what foods work for you, but more importantly, what foods don't work for you, you have to listen to today's episode where I talk about the elimination diet. Now, before we jump in, I want to give you a little bit of context. So good doctors know, I'm not a doctor. You know, a lot of people message me and they're like, Dr. Drew, just heads up, I'm not a doctor. I hang out with a lot of them, but I'm not a doctor. But good doctors like my business partner, Dr. Mark Hyman, they know that almost every dysfunction, every disease has a root cause. In the world of functional medicine, which is the world that we're all in, root causes are addressed by either A, adding in things that are missing. So something's missing, so we have to add it in. Or B, removing obstacles that are getting in the way. Now, when it comes to adding in things, that's where most of our attention goes. And most people who are listening to this podcast are looking for the thing that they can do or add into their routine or their diet or the food or the supplement that's out there. Now, adding in is important. It's something that is helpful, that can help us feel better. And sometimes we're not eating something or we're not doing something, so we add it into our life to help us grow. But what doesn't get enough attention is removing. Removing something to then allow our body to return back to normal. And by the way, the reason that they call it functional medicine is when you add in what's missing and you remove what's causing an obstacle for your cells, your bacteria, your body to do what it needs to do. When you add in what's missing and you remove what's causing an obstacle, the cell, the body, your mitochondria, your DNA, it can return back to function. And that's why they call it functional medicine. Now, today's episode, which is on the elimination diet, is focused more on the removing side of it, because that's what the elimination diet is. Now, before we jump into the details of the elimination diet and how to do it and what the benefits are, I want to first start big picture. And big picture, I want to say, what is the reason that we want to go down the path of personalizing our diet? It sounds like a basic question, but it's an important question to ask ourselves. The reason that we personalize our diet is because, number one, there's a term called bioindividuality. And bioindividuality says that not everything that works for one person is going to work for everybody else. How do we know this? We know this because throughout human evolution, there have been a whole variety of diets and ways that people eat. A few summers ago, I went with a group of my friends to Africa, and I spent time with this tribe, this nomadic tribe, which, you know, can be dated back to about 800 years ago that they kind of had their origin as this tribe. And the tribe was called the Samburu tribe, and they were in northern Kenya. And this tribe, which was primarily a nomadic tribe, primarily consisted off of dairy. They drank dairy 2, 3, 4 times a day. And they would drink blood. When there wasn't enough grass to feed the cows and the goats, they would puncture the cow's vein and they would drain a little bit of blood. Not enough to kill the cow, but enough that they could have that, and they would drink that. They would eat a few berries and twigs and that sort of thing, but their diet mostly consisted off of dairy and then occasionally blood when there wasn't enough grass. Now, this tribe has been eating and living this way for at least 800 years, probably a little bit longer than that. Now, just because that's what they've been doing doesn't mean that that's what's going to do well for us, and vice versa. That might seem like an extreme example, but there's plenty other examples that are out there that different groups of people with different genetic lineage, regions of the world that they grew up in, their unique health history, they respond differently to different foods. So just because your friend is doing great on this doesn't mean that's necessarily going to happen with you. So that's the first reason, bioindividuality. We personalize our diet because what works for somebody may not work for us. And what works for us today may not necessarily work for us tomorrow. More on that later on. The second reason we focus on personalizing our diet is actually to really feel great. The whole reason that we want to put attention and love and energy on our diet is not to have the best diet ever, right? There's no best diet that's there. It's the right diet for us that gives us the energy that we need to give love and attention to everything else that's there in our lives. This is why we invest on our diet and figuring out what foods work well. But also, along with our diet, there's many other aspects of health, which we've talked about. Exercise in past episodes, mindset, which I'm a huge fan of, and many, many other categories. Your spiritual or religious relationship, community, which I'm a huge fan of. So just understand that diet is one aspect of our overall health and wellness. And the whole reason that we invest in it is to get and feel amazing and have the energy so we can focus on the other things that are there for us. Sometimes that happens through diet. Sometimes that happens through other areas. Don't ever think that if you 100% dial in your diet, that everything in your life is going to work out. That being said, if you do dial in your diet and you figure out foods, especially the foods that don't work for you, I've found that a lot of the common symptoms that many of us grown used to that we deal with on a daily basis, especially when it comes to digestive issues, some skin issues, bloating, energy levels, I found that when you figure out what foods don't work for you, a lot of those issues are the first ones to either greatly be reduced or potentially completely go away. Now, to further explain the elimination diet, I gotta give you a little bit more of a backstory. I have friends who ask me all the time or text me and they say, Drew, you know a lot about functional medicine. You know a lot of the doctors that are out there. You're good at helping people match make and find the right doctor. I want to ask you, what test should I do? What test should I do to go and figure out what is the right diet for me? I get that question at least a couple times a week. And I always respond the same way. And I say, I wish it was that easy. I wish the science was at a place where we could do one test that could tell us exactly what foods work for us and what foods don't work for us. But we're not there yet. There is no test out there, even though some companies are starting to claim it and will tell you that if they could, you know, measure your stool and see the bacteria and tell you the exact right diet to do, we're not 100% there yet. There are great tests where you can learn a little bit and you can get a little piece of the puzzle. You can look at your genetics and see, are you somebody that does well with saturated fat? Are you somebody that doesn't do well with saturated fat? Are you somebody that's a fast metabolizer of caffeine? Are you a slow metabolizer? You can do other tests which will show you nutrient deficiencies, right? That's pretty common. You can do tests like that with a functional medicine doctor or an open-minded or integrative doctor. They can help you dial into what foods are, what nutrients are missing. That we've pretty well established. You can do tests that can help you figure out maybe what bacteria to give more support to, what a healthy gut looks like, and how to eat certain foods like fermented foods or fiber to help grow better bacteria. But there's not one test that's out there that will give you the complete picture and story. And that's important to know. It's important to know because almost every functional medicine doctor knows this. So while they will give you certain tests to help you figure out a piece of the puzzle, they rely on a simple and free tool that anybody could do. You can even do without a doctor, at least if it is just exploring to figure out what foods potentially work for you and what don't. And that is the elimination diet. The elimination diet is a free and easy tool that every single functional medicine doctor, many naturopathic doctors, many integrative doctors use to help a patient figure out what foods work for them, but more specifically, what foods don't work for them through the process of exactly what it's called, elimination. You know, I used to have a doctor friend of mine that would tell me, you know, Drew, I believe in the elimination diet so much that if I could, this would be unethical, right? I just want to preface that. He said, this is unethical, but this is what I would do. This is how much I believe in the elimination diet. I would bet that I could get an actor and I could put a lab coat on that actor and give them a nice office in New York City. And I could teach this actor the basics of just like how to pretend they're a doctor. And the only tool in their toolbox would be the elimination diet. And let's say that this actor could see patients who are dealing with a whole host of different things, non-life threatening, but more chronic issues, back pain, you know, joint pain, digestive stomach upset, often the things that they've already seen a couple doctors for that they haven't had a chance to get better from. And I would teach this actor to basically write on a prescription pad that the protocol for this patient would be the elimination diet, which would be a 21-day program where for 3 weeks, they would remove a whole bunch of foods. I'll get more into that in a second. And they would only focus on eating whole foods, fruits and vegetables, you know, nuts, seeds, meats. They would avoid dairy, gluten, common allergens that are out there. They'd stay away from alcohol and caffeine and a few other things. And then to come back in 30 days. Now, not every, by the way, listen, this is unethical. He was just using this as an example of how much he believed in the elimination diet. He said, after 30 days, 60 days, if we did a follow-up visit with those patients, quote unquote, with this actor doctor, what you would find is almost 50 to 70% of people would have significantly seen their symptoms improved. Now, I can say that while that would be completely unethical, fraudulent, and a whole bunch of other things that would be there, I get the point that this doctor was trying to make. He's trying to say that for a lot of individuals, food truly is medicine, and there's a lot of foods that they're eating, common foods that we're all eating on a regular basis that often cause major inflammation in their body and are a huge factor of their chronic disease. In my own life, I've seen that when so many of my friends and families have embarked on the elimination diet, not in addition to my own personal story, which I'll tell you about in a second, they've seen huge improvements with things that they've been dealing with for years that often traditional medicine would say, this is just part of the process of getting older. Now, to understand a little bit of the power of the elimination diet, we first have to clear up something that's a misconception. You know, a lot of people are familiar with food allergy testing, right? You might know that somebody has an allergy to peanuts. You might know that somebody is lactose intolerant, or you might know somebody that has like a full-blown like celiac allergy where they're actually truly allergic and have an IgE response and antibodies response to celiac, and they have celiac disease because they're responding to proteins inside of gluten, right? That's a common one that's out there, one that often gets underdiagnosed. So that's a traditional food allergy. A food allergy is something, and I've linked to a really great article by my friend Chris Kresser where he expands and dives into the science a little bit deeper. A food allergy is primarily an IgE, immunoglobulin E, and antibodies response in the body. The body truly feels like it's under threat and is being attacked by this thing. And that can happen at a level from, you know, medium severity where you have symptoms to a full-blown like anaphylactic shock. If you've ever heard stories of people who had peanuts at a restaurant and almost died, you know, that's a food allergy response. And the science on that is fantastic. Most good allergists that are out there can help you dial in and see, do you have a dust allergy, mold, peanuts, other types of fruit or vegetables that sometimes people are truly allergic to. Now, an elimination diet is helpful for the other 90%. You know, only a few people really have food allergies, but there's this other category called food intolerance. Food intolerance is foods that you aren't traditionally, if you would run a true allergy test, wouldn't have an IgE immunoglobulin or antibody response, potentially. There could be antibody response, but they show up as discomfort. A food intolerance is, you know, you eat wheat sometimes, and even though you don't have celiac disease and you've not been diagnosed with that, you have an intolerance towards that week because you get digestive upset. You feel like your joints are achy. You feel other challenges that are out there. Food intolerances are extremely common. Food allergies are not that common. So when sometimes people come back and they say, hey, I did a food allergy test. Wheat wasn't one of the things that showed up on the allergy test. Functional medicine doctors explain that a food allergy test is great for a traditional allergy, but it's not great to figure out your intolerances. And most of what us are all dealing with is intolerances. Here's an example from my own life. How I figured out and even learned about the elimination diet is that I had been struggling with basically debilitating acne. And I say debilitating to be a little dramatic, but the truth is when you're in high school, and you're just starting to date for the first time, and you're getting ready for prom, and you're getting through all these milestones that are there, and it's all about kind of your peer group and that. Having really bad acne and scarring and systemic acne and cystic acne is one of the worst things that's there for a young teenager. Obviously, there's a lot worse things that are out there, but it's one of the top challenging things that are out there. And it was the case for me. At around the age of about 13, when I first got into high school, I guess you're 13 when you're in high school, freshman year. Anyways, around that age, I started breaking out pretty heavily. And I had not really had breakouts prior to that and really bad acne. And that continued all the way through my high school up to the point where even at my senior prom, I took photos and I just remember dreading how bad my acne looked, and I would have to save this memory forever, but it would be me with acne. Ultimately, all that pain and suffering put me in a place where I was open-minded. So I graduated high school. I was 17 the summer that I graduated high school, about to turn 18. This was the year 2000, so about 20 years ago. And I was at a conference here in Los Angeles where I currently reside. And at that conference, I heard a speaker basically talk about the fact that dairy, even if you weren't lactose intolerant, which is an allergy, let's say you're allergic to dairy, a lot of people are familiar with that, you could have a food intolerance. And I thought, okay, that's interesting. And this speaker, who was approaching it more from an animal rights perspective, was basically talking about how the dairy industry is really cruel, it's not great on cows and everything that happens, et cetera, et cetera. And I was vegetarian at the time. Dairy made up a huge part of my diet. And I can remember thinking, like, there's no way in hell I'm really feel for the animals and I'm very sorry. There's no way in hell that I can cut out dairy because I'd have nothing left to eat. Cheese and dairy and milk are a big part of my diet. Then at the end of her speech, she said, she just threw in a little something. She said, by the way, if you have really bad acne, there's early research that's starting that dairy can cause a food intolerance and can lead to something in the body called inflammation, not for everybody, for some people. And my ears perked up and I turned immediately over to look at the speaker and I thought, huh, that's interesting. I gotta look into this a little bit more. So that summer, I read everything I could get my hands on. I didn't know anything about functional medicine. I was just about to start university. And so I was doing my own basic level of research. And I saw that, okay, there are some people that are out there that have basically removed dairy for a period of time and seen if it improved their skin. I asked my dermatologist, they said that there's no evidence on this, but if I wanted to try it, I could, because what else did I have to lose? I tried Differin, I tried all the different Accutane, you know, Proactiv, I tried all the different things that were out there and I had not really seen major improvements. So what the heck, let's try it. So for the next basically 45 days, I cut out dairy completely from my diet. And in that process, I started to notice the redness. First week, I started to notice the redness on my skin go away. Second week, I saw that my pimples, I wasn't getting new pimples. And the acne that I already had was starting to slow down a little bit. Third week, I started noticing little parts of my skin that were never clear started to clear up a little bit. Then by the fourth week, I started noticing that my cheeks were completely clear and that my forehead was the only part that still had some acne that was left over. By about the 45-day mark, I can't remember if it was 45 days or if it was a little bit longer than that, by about that level, my family was completely blown away. They were like, what the hell have you been doing? When I told them that I had cut dairy out, nobody believed me. They just thought that I was growing out of my hormones and I was finally like done with that period. And now the acne had chosen to mysteriously vanish. But I knew firsthand that something had happened. I didn't know what, but I knew something had happened. Now, even though I didn't follow a proper elimination diet, which I'll get to in a second, that was my first early experience that certain foods, even though my sisters didn't have that issue and they were having dairy, that certain foods were having a deeper impact on me than other individuals. And that had me start to ask the question of why. Now, ultimately, I ended up years later connecting with a functional medicine doctor and learning about this entire world, which this podcast is about, and understanding about gut health and our bacteria and inflammation, and all the dots started connecting. And the dots that started connecting were this. In my case, even though I've used the elimination diet for other areas to improve my health, which I'll talk about in a second, in my case with dairy, I grew up and I was on antibiotics a lot. I was on antibiotics a lot. I would get bronchitis and strep throat at least once a year. I get sick a lot. And back in the day, people would hand out antibiotics like candies, especially, you know, if you had doctors in the family, they would just hand you an antibiotic and say, yeah, okay, try this and see if you feel any better. What I didn't understand at the time is that all those antibiotics had wreaked havoc, almost like a nuclear bomb on my gut bacteria. And whether it was that in combination with some nutrient deficiencies, because I grew up as a processed food vegetarian, my gut bacteria was not in a great stage. And so already, without them being able to support me, certain foods that had a little bit of an inflammatory impact, and the tendency is that when you have dairy, you're not just having milk by itself, you're having it with cereal, which is sugar and wheat, you're having it with ice cream, which is sugar, you're having it with pasta, which is gluten. So dairy, in combination with these other things that were not healthy that I was eating on a regular basis that made up 99% of my diet, that was creating an inflammatory impact. And we've done past episodes. If you want to know a little bit more about this, check out my episode with Dr. Robin Berzin, where we dive into the science of acne and how inflammation in the body seems to be one of the core factors that can create especially acne for younger kids, but also adult acne. It's a little bit different for men and women, and we break down those caveats. So we'll link to that episode and you can check it out if you want to know a little bit more about the science. Dr. Robin Berzin from Parsley Health does a great job. So when I removed that inflammatory trigger, all of a sudden, I was not having that cascade of inflammation in my diet, so the acne wasn't getting worse, and in some cases, eventually after that 45, 50-day period of time, stopped completely. Now, the interesting thing was, as I mentioned earlier, my sisters were not going through that. They had other issues that they were, you know, dealing with that later they figured out when they would have dairy regularly, they would get a stuffy nose, they're more likely to get sick, their digestion would feel off a little bit, but they weren't having acne. And again, this goes back to our first point in this big idea episode, which is that there's bio individuality. Everybody is a little bit different based on their genetic lineage, their own DNA, but also their life experiences. And in my case, all these antibiotics completely destroyed my good bacteria and made me more prone to the inflammatory cascade that can happen when you have certain toxic triggers in your diet. And in my case, that was dairy. I was about to say acne, but that was dairy that was causing acne. Now, later on, once I figured out the power of the elimination diet, I kind of just happenstanced on it by accident when I had my acne issues. But later on, I understood that there's other foods that are out there, foods that we're often told that are very healthy for you. And believe me, everybody was telling me that dairy was healthy for me, especially my Indian vegetarian parents, because it was one of the only things that we could eat at that time. And it was a source of protein inside of our diet. I'm not a vegetarian now, but at that time it was a very important staple and deeply woven into our culture. So later on, I understood that in addition to dairy, there's these other foods that are common foods that are causing inflammatory reactions for people or all sorts of other issues in the body that are in the category of food intolerances. I later learned that gluten, which is part of the protein in wheat, that had an impact for a lot of individuals. So I got curious and I said, what if I try an elimination diet on gluten and see what my impact is? And so on and so on. I'll get to the other areas and the foods that people often eliminate to see. The other thing that I understood when I got into the world of functional medicine and researching a little bit more and learning from these incredible doctors that I surround myself with and have on the podcast is that our food has changed more over the last 100 years than it has in the last 5,000 or 10,000 years. So we've adulterated our food. You know, Dr. Hyman recently did an episode with Robert Kennedy on glyphosate and how in 2006, when they started regularly using glyphosate, which is a pesticide found up in Roundup and many other things, you've probably seen the lawsuits that are out there. When they started using it as a drying agent regularly in wheat, not just as a proactive thing that they would do to get rid of pests, they would use it as a drying agent in wheat. Glyphosate use in our population exploded, and a lot of individuals started having issues with wheat for the first time. So whether it's pesticides, whether it's the fact that in Europe and in other countries often their wheat is long chain wheat versus the wheat here in the US, which is genetically modified or bred to be different, it's short chain wheat. It's a little bit oversimplified. We've done episodes on this, which we can link up to, but that short chain wheat grows quicker. It's bred for its specific flavor profile, but it has more gluten inside of it. More gluten, more challenges to your system compared to breads originally, let's say sourdough breads or a lot of flatbreads that were out there that had less gluten inside of them. So in addition to the pesticides, foods have been adulterated and modified so significantly that often many of the staple foods that we think are healthy for us, grains, beans, dairy, wheat, a lot of these foods can have challenges. This is the reason why the elimination diet was such a big tool for a lot of functional medicine doctors. Now, one thing you'll notice if you ever go to a functional medicine doctor in the future is after you fill out your intake and your forms, like they do at our medical practice, the Ultra Wellness Center in Massachusetts, and the great doctors that are there, once you fill out your new patient packet with all your health history and your issues and what your symptoms are and what you're dealing with, when you have your first appointment with a doctor and they go through it and they talk to you a little bit about it and they put together the plan and they ask you questions on your health history, often one of the action items that they'll leave you with is called a base plan, right? A base plan. A base plan could be some small amount of supplements that help target some areas that they know that you might have challenges with. The base plan might be also, they'll leave you with certain tests that they want you to do so they can more deeply personalize your health experience and figure out what's going on with you so they don't have to guess. But they'll also leave you with a base diet. A base diet that often includes an elimination diet. What a lot of these functional medicine doctors have seen and what the Institute of Functional Medicine teaches is that an elimination diet is one of the most powerful tools, especially if a patient has not begun to explore or figure out what foods work for them and what foods don't, especially. An elimination diet is an extremely powerful tool to help the patient figure out and tell the doctor if they feel better or not. So let's say your first appointment is on day one, and then your second appointment is 30 days later, 45 days later, once you get the lab results back and the doctor has more information to go over with you. What they're also looking for is they want you to do an elimination diet challenge. And there's different levels of it, which we'll get to in a second, but they want you to do that to see, do any of your symptoms improve? Do any of your symptoms improve with what you're dealing with? If you have digestive issues or you're dealing with Crohn's disease or you're dealing with some back pain and joint pain that nobody's been able to fix, do any of those symptoms improve? You have a post-nasal drip, you have brain fog, you don't have the energy in the day that you need to. Do any of those symptoms improve when you remove certain foods? So they'll tell the patient, okay, great, I want you to follow an elimination diet. Because traditionally what they know is just by getting rid of the wrong foods that don't work for you right now, many patients see a significant improvement in a lot of the symptoms that they're dealing with. And this is why the elimination diet has become so popular as a tool that people can try themselves, even without a doctor. It's safe enough to be able to do that. Just make sure you read up on it and you get educated and understand what's there, because you're still eating great, healthy, quality foods that are out there. It's more focused on what you're removing, so you can see if those foods are a contributor to why you feel off. And what many of these doctors will do, especially if a patient has not had a chance to look into what foods don't work for them, is they'll often start with the basic elimination diet, where they have the patient focus on eating just whole foods, no alcohol, no sugar, and no caffeine, right? Those are a base. And they'll have the patient remove out things like grains, wheat, and dairy. Wheat and dairy, right? Wheat and dairy tend to be two of the most common foods that are out there, at least in the Western world, that are causing or correlated with a lot of the daily symptoms that people have that lead to just a feeling of unwell. Low energy, brain fog, post-nasal drip, a chronic kind of cough, getting sick regularly, digestive upset, loose stools or constipation. It seems to be that wheat and dairy are two of the biggest toxic triggers that are related to people not feeling well. Now, does that mean that you can never eat wheat and dairy again? No, we'll get to that in a second. This is more that if you've never tried to eliminate these two foods from your diet, and you're still suffering with some level of discomfort or dis-ease that you're dealing with, wheat and dairy seem to be one of the two biggest things to be able to focus on when it comes to the process of trying to feel better and personalize your diet so you can feel amazing. Now, for a lot of people who've already done wheat and dairy, the next level is the elimination diet is a beautiful tool that can help you go even deeper. Wheat and dairy were one of the first things that I did, but the next major thing that I did is, as a vegetarian, I would eat a ton of grains. I was eating grains like all the time. That was a good staple of my diet. So a few years later, after I learned about the elimination diet and properly how to do it, the next thing that I tried to eliminate in this process, which I'll break down in a second, stay tuned, we're getting there. The next thing that I tried to eliminate was grains. I would feel low energy regularly, right around like 2 o'clock after eating lunch. Regularly, I would feel like a major drop in energy. I would have digestive upset. I had been vegan for almost 7 years, and the first 2 years I felt fantastic. But around 3, 4, 5 years, I started to get a lot of bloating. I started to get digestive upset, which was kind of weird for me, because I felt like I got rid of all that stuff by eliminating dairy, but it had come back. So I was talking to one of my friends in the functional medicine community, and they said, you know, you should really look at grains. It seems to be that grains are a more recent addition to the human diet if we look at the evolution of human beings. And even if we ate grains, you know, grains are only as old as modern agriculture, which is really only about 10 to 15,000 years old. It's not something that we've been eating for a really long time. So it seems to be that maybe our bodies have not evolved to handle a large amount of grains, and you should try it because, again, everybody is a little bit different. So I went on the journey of eliminating grains by following a 30-day, 21-day, you know, everybody has different days that they use, but I did a 30-day elimination diet at the time, went back to the basic diet of the elimination diet, removed, still kept off gluten and dairy because I wasn't eating those foods. And then in addition, I removed grains completely from my diet. No rice, no quinoa, no brown rice. I was eating so much brown rice. I was eating so much quinoa because I was told that those foods were very healthy for you. And so I would eat a lot of my diet and have a lot of my diet that way. Plus, I was still vegetarian at the time, so I was eating a good bulk of grains inside of my diet, almost like a macrobiotic diet. And I removed those foods over that period. And from what I remember, I kept a little food journal, but I don't have it with me. I haven't saved it since then. I remember writing down that after the first week, I already felt way less bloating. That was the first thing. By the second week of not having any grains in my diet, and I would have grains often two meals a day, especially at lunch, I would have a big brown rice bowl or, you know, with a ton of veggies. I would still eat a lot of like brown rice pasta, you know, things like that. And so I removed those grains from my diet. And by the second week, I saw my energy start to rebound. After I would eat lunch, I wouldn't have grains. And I thought, I feel pretty amazing. I have the energy to sustain me the rest of the day. And that was a huge learning in me doing my second big elimination diet, is that maybe a large amount of grains don't work for me. Now, does that mean that I don't have grains right now? No, I've actually found that I can do pretty well with a little bit of white rice here and there, but brown rice and quinoa are things that I pretty much avoid. Unless if I don't really have any options and we're traveling, I can eat a little bit because I just know I'm not going to feel great. Maybe it was the antibiotics in the past. Maybe it was my, in addition to my gut bacteria, maybe it was my tight junctions in the gut. You know, we've done some episodes basically about the gut associated lymphatic tissue and the tight junctions in the gut. Check out our episode with Dr. Kieran, microbiologist Kieran Krishnan, where we talked a little bit more about this. But basically, we have these tight junctions in the gut, and I could have had holes from eating the wrong foods and having an immune reaction. So whatever it was, I just didn't feel great on grains. This is why functional medicine doctors want patients to go on an elimination diet and to try to remove these things, because nobody knows better than you how you feel. And especially if you're writing it down while you remove these foods, and seeing how you feel once you reintroduce them back in, which we haven't gotten to, but that's the next portion, then you can actually see the difference. So in addition to removing these foods, one of the ways that I saw firsthand, and this is part of the elimination diet process, well, you know what? Let me break down this process. I think this is a good time to be able to do it, because I've been kind of talking about it a little bit big picture, but let's break down the elimination diet process. So Whole30, if you're familiar with it, has kind of popularized this, and some functional medicine doctors have their own version. I'm going to give you the basic idea, but know that there's different variations that are out there, but there's a ton of articles on the elimination diet, and we've linked to a couple PDFs by Whole30, and a friend of ours, Dr. Susan Blum, has some interesting symptom charts, which we'll talk about here in a second. So the first basic aspect of the elimination diet is eat real food. Eat meat, seafood, eggs, spices, natural fats, herbs, vegetables, and fruits. So you're going to focus on whole foods. So no processed foods, no Frankenfoods, no Twinkies, but not even no Twinkies, no organic Oreos, because those are also processed, right? No processed drinks. We're going to focus on the basics. Now, the elimination diet is called the elimination diet because of what you avoid, what we're eliminating, what we're removing, because we're trying to figure out what doesn't work for us. So when it comes to eliminating, the first things that we're going to eliminate are sugar, any sugar, real or artificial, that's out there, right? So that means honey, that means Splenda, if you're having that in your coffee, that means regular table sugar, or any food that's out there that's has sugar added to it. The next thing that we're going to eliminate that's part of the known foods that are not really great for us on a regular basis, we don't need an elimination diet to teach us this, would be alcohol, right? So alcohol and caffeine is often included in a lot of people's elimination diet because so many people are dependent on caffeine. And even though caffeine can be very helpful, and there's been different studies that are out there how caffeine can be linked to, you know, longevity, in the right amount of dosages that are there, we know that a lot of people have caffeine dependencies. So most functional medicine doctors will remove caffeine in addition to alcohol from the diet. The next thing that they'll tell you to remove is dairy. And then the next thing that they'll tell you to remove is grains. And that naturally includes wheat as part of that process too. So you're removing wheat, but also other grains as well. The next aspect that some elimination diets have removed and some functional medicine doctors won't remove, it's really up to what you follow, but in Whole30, they do remove this. In some other elimination diets, they don't remove this, is beans. A lot of people that have issues with grains also have issues with a large amount of beans in their diet. I know for myself, for instance, when I later tested beans through this exact process, I found that I don't do well with a lot of beans. After grains, beans was the next thing that I had a chance to look at. interestingly enough, and we did an episode with Dr. Stephen Gundry on this topic, when I go to India and I visit family over there and they cook everything in a pressure cooker and they do slow cooking and they eat a lot of beans and lentils in their diet, when I have beans and lentils there, I seem to do much better. Now, if I eat a large amount of them, I don't feel great and my energy dips a little bit, but I can get by with having a little bit of beans and grains in my diet as long as they're prepared properly, soaked, right, to remove a lot of the enzyme inhibitors that are there. And then when cooked, cooked in a pressure cooker to destroy a lot of the anti-nutrients that are inside of vegetables, which seem to cause a lot of digestive upset. But if I'm just out and about and I have beans at a restaurant or it's taco night and somebody's putting beans inside of it, I don't really eat them anymore. But when I used to have it a little bit here and there, immediately I'd feel like bloated, my digestion is off, I feel low energy, and a whole bunch of other things similarly to grains. So those are the basics that are there, right? Again, you're going to avoid all junk foods, sugar, alcohol, often caffeine, grains and legumes, beans, dairy, and that's the basics of it. So those are the foods that you're going to avoid. And in the process of avoiding them, you're going to go now, let's say, most doctors that I've talked to say at least 3 weeks. So 21 days, 3 weeks, often sometimes people will do a full month. And it usually takes a full month to do this whole process. So the first thing is you're going to remove those. You're going to go on that program or protocol. By the way, if you've read any of Dr. Hyman's books like 10-Day Detox, Food, What the Heck Should I Eat, there is the process of the elimination diet that's baked into the dietary protocol in those books at the end of it. And also Whole30 is kind of really popularized this. So that's often a great program for people to follow. So when you go and you remove these foods and you eat only from the list of approved foods, you're trying to notice how you feel. How do you feel week one? How do you feel week two? Interestingly enough, there's things that people have been dealing with for their entire lives that they start to notice some improvement in. My dad, when I first put him on the elimination diet, he would have this chronic back pain that he was just used to. And when I had him off of dairy and gluten, wheat and other grains, which he ate a lot of too because he was vegetarian and still is mostly, what he noticed is by week number two, that chronic back pain that he'd wake up with in the morning wasn't there. Now, what does back pain have to do with dairy and gluten? Where it seems to be that some grains, especially wheat and gluten as a byproduct inside of wheat, it seems to be that for some people, wheat can have this inflammatory effect inside of the body. Now, is it the pesticides? Is it the way the wheat is grown? Who knows? There's plenty of people who are way smarter than me that dive into this, but it seems to be that that's there. Now, he could go to a doctor or he could read a book that says, wheat is healthy, everybody should eat it, it's a great source of fiber. But in this process, he figured it out for himself. And that's why I recommend the elimination diet is that don't let somebody tell you, try it yourself. Remove this food and see how you feel. He also noticed that his nose wasn't as stuffy and he could breathe a little easier in the morning. So these are the examples of why we want to check in over those 21 days or 30 days on the elimination diet. Now, once you get to the end of the elimination diet, you want to follow something called the reintroduction process. And this is the key. So many people do the elimination diet, but they don't do the reintroduction process. The reintroduction process is the elimination diet. It's the process of actually seeing, is it this food or this category of foods that make you feel bad? So let's go back to my first experience with the elimination diet before I even knew what the elimination diet was. Dairy. I had taken out dairy for that 45-day period, but somebody said, well, you know, just try it back to see if it actually was dairy. And without even knowing it, I followed this reintroduction process somewhat. After 45 days of not having dairy and my face clearing up and my family freaking out and everybody telling me like, whoa, this is crazy. What I did next is that next week I had a glass of milk and I had some ice cream, mostly because I missed it, but also I wanted to see what would happen. Interestingly enough, I had 2 servings of dairy that day, and the next day I had a couple servings. And on the second day that I had a couple servings of dairy, that same day I broke out again. My face was red, and I started to get this post-nasal drip that I had before that I got rid of by eliminating dairy, but I got it back now after including dairy back in. So immediately I started to see symptoms that happened when I started reintroducing the food. That's why so many functional medicine doctors, when you go on the elimination diet, tell you to keep a symptom chart. We've linked to one from Dr. Susan Blum from the Blum Center in New York that you can use in the process of figuring it out. So they'll ask you questions like, how is your bloating after having these foods? And the key is, again, you don't want to have all the foods that you eliminated. If you're going to do the elimination diet and you want to see if dairy is a food that has that you have an issue with, you just want to reintroduce dairy while keeping the base diet. So if you've also removed grains, don't add back in grains. Just keep dairy so you can figure out if dairy is one of those foods that has an issue with. Now, everybody has a little bit of a different protocol, but from what Dr. Hyman recommends, and I also recommend this too, you want to have 2 days where you're having the food that you removed. Let's take, for example, dairy. You want to have it 2 to 3 times over the course of 2 days while keeping the rest of your diet base. So don't add back in sugar, alcohol, wheat, you know, grains, and other things like that that you removed. Then see the symptom chart. How's your bloating? Do you have headaches? Do you have joint pain? If you're a little bit older and you're a woman that's going through menopause or perimenopause, or premenopause, do you have hot flashes? Do you notice certain things? In the case of my dad, do you have back pain, joint pain, other stuff? You want to write this down and remember, how did you respond to this food after reintroducing it? Now, if you're going to reintroduce multiple foods, the way you do it is, let's say the first 2 days you have dairy and you write down what things happened to you. And the reason you do 2 days is sometimes it could take more than 24 hours before you even know that something is an issue, right? Some people even recommend 3 days. Now, after 2 to 3 days of reintroducing that food in, take a third day to go back on the base elimination diet. So remove dairy again and go back to eating completely clean the way you were before. And then the next time, reintroduce another food. Let's take, for instance, wheat. If you don't know if wheat is an issue for you, reintroduce wheat. Have a little bread, but don't have dairy on it too. Have a little bread in the morning. Make a little pasta for lunch and see if this food is correlated with any of the symptoms that you're having again. And often you'll find that it actually is. If you're not clear if those foods aren't working for you, at least with dairy and gluten, it's very hard. I don't think I've met anybody that doesn't have some mild reaction to reintroducing one of those foods back in after doing a 30-day elimination diet. Now, what if you already know that dairy and wheat are foods that don't work for you? Can you use the elimination diet to go a little bit deeper? You absolutely can, and that's exactly what I've done. I've used the elimination diet, that same basic process of going back to completely removing the main foods that seem to be linked with food intolerances. And I've used it for, as I've mentioned, I did grains, I did beans. One of the next foods that I had, which I didn't realize was linked to a lot of my light level issues that I was having, especially redness on my face that would pop up occasionally, is nightshade vegetables. Nightshade vegetables like eggplants, tomatoes, bell peppers. I would notice that whenever I had a large amount of these foods, I would have a reaction. My face would get very red. I would often have less energy after eating those foods, like a big bowl of tomato soup. And I just wanted to get to the bottom of it. And again, one of my friends in the functional medicine community said, you should look at nightshades. Some people have major issues with it, whether it's histamine or lectin or something. A lot of people have issues with nightshades. So try it out. Most people, if you are somebody who suffers from any kind of arthritis or deep joint pain, there does seem to be some link that's out there from the research of nightshades and joint pain. So if you're somebody who has arthritis, but you think you eat pretty clean, or you have joint pain, it's worth exploring the elimination diet and doing a little bit of a search to see. I mean, what do you have to lose in that process of seeing, are these foods linked with some of your symptoms? Now, interestingly enough about nightshades, when we go back to the history, somebody might say, tomatoes, right? Like, how the hell could tomatoes are healthy. How could they be linked to somebody's joint pain or redness or almost like a histamine response that's there? Well, tomatoes, nightshades, bell peppers, eggplants, if you have read you've all Nora Harari's Sapiens book, or you looked into a little bit of food history, you'll notice that those foods were only native to North America. So the only people that were regularly eating them on a regular basis were Native Americans, Indian tribes, Native Americans. They weren't part of the European diet. They weren't even part of the Indian diet or African diet. You know, my diet, my traditional vegetarian Indian diet, we would eat so many nightshades, bell peppers, spicy stuff, hot peppers. In fact, most people who know, if you've ever had any Indian food at all, you know that spicy Indian food is a claim to fame. You know, like, how hot can you tolerate it? Well, interestingly enough, spices have always been part of the Indian diet, but bell peppers and hot peppers didn't get introduced into India until the early 1600s. It was the Portuguese settlers who came to the U.S., the early settlers who were trading and picking up different seeds with the Native Americans over here, that started to bring a lot of those foods over through Europe, and then ultimately bringing them to Asia and eventually India. So a lot of those foods weren't even part of my history of eating those foods as part of my Indian vegetarian diet. And this could be, some people believe this could be part of the reason why some of us do better with certain types of foods or other types of foods. Now, does that mean that everybody has to worry about tomatoes and nightshades and bell peppers? No. Plenty of my friends, my girlfriend, a lot of my family, they have no issues with these foods. And then some people do. And this is all the process of personalizing your diet and figuring it out. Now, the elimination diet is work. It takes a long time. If you're really going to follow it properly, it takes a little bit of time. And really, you can't do a lot of foods back to back that you end up testing. It takes time. And I've found that in general, most people can only really test two foods, maybe three foods that are there. And usually the first version of it is you try gluten and dairy. If you've never tried that, wheat and dairy. If you want to go further, often people would recommend beans, legumes, and grains. If you want to go even further, then research those food categories like nightshades. Look at some of the symptoms that you might be having and see, is there some research or is there somebody that's written about how this food, somebody trustworthy, maybe like one of the authors that's been on this episode, that's looked into, maybe there might be a connection with these foods. But another common reason that people might look at doing an elimination diet or some version of it would be, let's say if you have an autoimmune issue. There's a very common protocol in functional medicine that's a modified version of the elimination diet. It's called the autoimmune protocol. The autoimmune diet, some people call it. Chris Kresser, a lot of people have written about it. And this is a diet that a lot of functional medicine doctors give their patients that have autoimmune issues. Isabella Wentz, a past podcast guest, has written about this. For people who have Hashimoto's, what does a modified paleo diet look like that removes a lot of the triggers that are there so that somebody can then reintroduce them and figure out if some of those foods work for that individual or not? Another one that's a little bit less known is called the FODMAP diet. A FODMAP diet is another version of an elimination diet. There are these oligosaccharides that are in certain foods, vegetables, fruits, other things like coconut, avocado, that for some people cause digestive upset. For some people seem to be things that flare up their symptoms. So individuals who research about the FODMAP diet often will embark on an elimination diet to see, are they reactive to FODMAP-based foods. Once you get down this rabbit hole, it could go on and on and on. And it's not to try all these different diets just for trying them. It's to know and be aware that they exist so that you could go down the journey of trying the right elimination diet to see if it can help alleviate some of the symptoms that you're dealing with or some of the digestive or discomfort or low energy that you're going through. Another version of a elimination diet that a past guest has talked about is removing lectins. Lectins, a lectin-free diet, a lectin-free elimination diet, which Dr. Stephen Gundry has written about. You know, it's a controversial diet. Some people say that lectins don't have that many issues with us. But again, if you think that you're somebody that is suffering from issues that relate to lectin intolerance, you might consider that. All this is to say there are tools that are available for you to help you personalize your diet. And they don't have to be crazy expensive tests that only a few can afford. Often this free tool, you still have to buy food, but you can do it cheaply and affordably if you're making it yourself and not eating out. It's probably going to be healthier for you. Often this tool that so many doctors use is the elimination diet. I'll conclude on one more thing. The most recent way that I've incorporated an elimination diet into my life is I did it on fried foods. I wouldn't have fried foods regularly, but occasionally I'd go out to dinner with friends, or I'd be out with a girlfriend and, you know, she might want sweet potato fries. And it was an indulgence that I would have, you know, once a month or once every couple months that were there. It wasn't something that I had regularly. But interestingly enough, I started to notice that whenever I would have fried foods, I would really go down a cascading effect of symptoms that were related to my throat. I'd get post-nasal dripped again. My tonsils, which I never had removed, my tonsils would flare up. It would usually lead to, if I was having fried food because I was traveling and I was on vacation, I might be having a little bit more alcohol, sugar, I would get sick for a few days. I'd get like a common cold type of reaction that was there. So I said, you know what? I'm going to really test this on myself, do a proper elimination diet, reintroduce fried foods. We know fried foods regularly are not healthy for you. Everybody knows that. But for me, they were causing an extreme reaction. Who knows? Maybe it was all the ear, nose, and throat issues and dealing with strep throat and having all these antibiotics and other things like that that I dealt with in my childhood. So I did an elimination diet on fried foods, and I got so clear that fried foods are literally my kryptonite. I don't eat fried foods at all whatsoever because I have such an impact on my overall health when I have fried foods. And I only figured that out through doing an elimination diet on this and really understanding that connection, that it was the fried food that was tripping me up. All right. So once you've done an elimination diet, the question is always, do I have to stay away from these foods forever? Do I never eat dairy? Do I never eat wheat? No, you got to figure out, you know, your right dosage. And I would have an old friend of mine, old colleague, who would say, how strict you are on removing certain of these foods from your diet is based on how sick you are. There's certain people that are dealing with autoimmune issues that if they have a little bit of dairy, a little bit of wheat, they are knocked out for a few days. There's other people who can have a little cheese, a little goat cheese here and there because quality matters, can have a little bit of dairy here and there and a birthday cake, and they don't feel completely off. Maybe their stomach is a little bit upset, but it's not going to throw them off. So that's why it's important to figure out what you can tolerate. There's other individuals, again, we've talked about this in past episodes, that go to Europe where their food standards are so much higher and they have dairy or gluten or other things and they see no reaction at all. Now, a lot of the functional medicine doctors that I talk to seem to think that in addition to them having different types of cows that are bred differently and less protein inside of the milk and other factors, when it comes to dairy, when it comes to wheat, they're not using pesticides. They're not using hormones for the cows. There's so many ways that when you go to Italy, for example, I went last summer with my family to Sicily, I had dairy, I had gluten. Now, if I had it like 4 days in a row, I didn't feel amazing, but I have a little dairy here and there, I didn't break out. I had a little gluten, I didn't break out. So the question is it those foods or is it the quality? And again, that's for everybody else to figure out. That's for everybody here to figure out. But it does seem to be some link with the quality that's there. Anyways, this is the power of the elimination diet, a free tool that can radically transform your health by helping you figure out what to avoid. What to avoid? What to avoid is so key. You know, most of us focus on what to add in. We're so focused on what's the next supplement, what's the next thing that I got to do? What's the superfood? What's the food that I got to add in? Well, sometimes the next evolution in your health is not about adding in. It's about removing. Removing is different. It's not as fun as adding in. It's tougher to get through. It's tougher to practice, but it's often underrated. But it's so powerful. I don't know anybody that personally in my immediate life that has an extremely incredible relationship with food. They enjoy what they enjoy. They have a great life. They eat the things that they know. They're also clear about the foods that make them feel off. I don't know anybody that has a great relationship with food in a healthy way, not in an extreme way, not in a dogmatic way, but also truly feels healthy on a daily basis that hasn't paid attention to what not to eat for them. I hope this excites you in the journey of exploring the elimination diet. If you want to dig in a little bit deeper, it's interesting. There's a doctor, Dr. Albert Rowe in 1926, who popularized the elimination diet because he saw for certain patients, when they removed certain foods, they got extremely better. That's the origin of the elimination diet. If you want to look it up, we'll link to his original book. You can still find it on Amazon and a few other places. Bunch of links in this podcast to other episodes that I reference and a few PDFs that are out there and articles. Let me know what you thought about this episode. This is a little bit of a longer big idea episode, but I believe in the elimination diet so much because as you can see, I've used it in my life for boundless energy, for better skin, for better digestion, and I'm so thankful I took the time to do it. Text me what you thought about this episode, 302-200-5643. That's 302-200-5643. This is Drew Perowitz signing off. Wish you health and happiness. Talk to you soon.